All right, folks. Well, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's time for another week of the Rec Poker Podcast. That intro music from Peter Trulin puts a smile on my face every time I hear it. Thank you so much, Peter, if you're listening. I'm your host, Jim Reed, Bluffsterini in the home game and at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter. And I have the best freaking job in the world talking poker with my friends here on the strategy edition of the podcast every Monday night while we steal each other's chips in the free nightly home game. So we're going to take a post from the free Rec Poker forums and talk about it here on the air. But first, I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino. It's just an hour north of the Twin Cities in Columbus, Minnesota. And if you want to find out more about them, you can go to runaces.com. Most of what we do here is free. We're a largely volunteer-based organization, so we depend on support of our sponsors and also from our premium members who take part in our training material and study opportunities for only $15 a month. So if you think that the conversations we have here on the show are fun, come join the group. Get involved. You can get your first month of premium membership for only $5 by using the code RECPOKER at checkout, and I hope you do. But don't let that stop you. We have so many free resources here for recreational poker players. The list just gets longer and longer every week, and you can sign up for free and take advantage of all that great stuff. All it takes is an email address and a smile, but we do insist on both. Now, they let me host the show on Mondays, but I'm just one man. It takes a group, a gang, a crew to make all the magic happen around here. We call this group of wizards the Wrecking Crew. If you want to find out more about me or the rest of the Wrecking Crew, just head on over to rec.poker/crew, or you can listen up because you're going to meet a few of them right here tonight on the show, starting with none other than producing co-host Chris Jones.
I'm Chris Jones. You can find me 5v5 on Twitter or 5x5 in the Poker Stars home game.
And I'm Rob Washam. You can find me as Rabman50 just about everywhere.
I'm Taylor Moss. You can find me at Taylor_Moss on Twitter or as GopherBoyTJM in the home game. Or Wednesday nights on Twitch, I stream at twitch.tv/recpoker. Come check us out while we play the home game.
It's a great time. It's a lot of fun. And since this episode's coming out in March, that's not the only time you get a chance. Tune in on another night to be shared soon to join Taylor and his bag of miscreants in our Marek Madness tournament every year, our heads up bracket ladder style tournament, where we've got some fun special guests and a lot of fantastic members from all different parts of Rec Poker competing in this heads up bracket tournament that Taylor puts on. And we stream that live on Twitch, twitch.tv/recpoker. Come and check that out. I'm always, Taylor is a family man. He can't usually attend the chats edition of the podcast because it comes right in the middle of dinner time. But he's here to join us for the forums edition. And we're going to look at a hand, a spot, a dynamic that Taylor and Chris were talking about before we got on the air here. So, Chris, should I tee you up? Were you the one playing this hand? Is that what I understand?
Yeah. So I can kind of explain. And I think people will sort of recognize this. So this was at Rec Poker Weekend at Running Aces played. It was a great weekend. We had a blast. We're doing it again in August, so get it on your calendars and come join us, because it was a real blast. It was fun to see people. But one of the dynamics at this is it's kind of like a series, right? So I played four tournaments in 2 days, and I started to see some of the same players at some of the tables. And one of those players was a kind of a player type that we might recognize in a lot of these kind of daily tournaments. He was just calling a lot, liking to sort of just see his hand. He kept calling even with hands that really you shouldn't be calling, and then sometimes he'd like make it there by the river and you'd be kind of like, how did you get there? But then, you know, maybe hit top pair in the river and win some pots. So he'd been winning some pots this way. An example of this was a hand that I did not play in, but just to kind of give you an example of this player, that there was a board of 9-9-5-3 queen that was bet on the flop, bet on the turn, and then checked through on the river, and he turned over queen seven offsuit. So he won the hand, but like, how did you get there on a 9-9-5-3 board that's double barreled when you've got queen seven, right? So that's the kind of player. And this player was seated directly to my left for a lot of the day in one of the tournaments, and then again in a second tournament was seated two to my left. And so what do we do when we know we're going to be opening into a player like this that is going to just call us a lot and call us with kind of nonsense and sometimes frustratingly get there with their weird two pairs and their whatever, but often, so like, what are some of the adjustments we start to make? And that's sort of like some of the conversation I was having. And I'll give you an exact hand as well that then came up after the hand that I was not in, where I saw this sort of thing take place, was I was in the hijack and this player was in the cutoff. I opened and got called, and we saw a flop of queen of diamonds, nine of clubs, eight of clubs. So we have this dynamic at play. What are some adjustments that we want to start making towards this kind of player? That was, I think, the big question. Does that help kind of ground us at least to start?
Yeah, yeah. So like the pat answer that people always tell people when they're in this spot is, you know, hey, don't worry. This is exactly the kind of mistake that we want these people to be making, because calling with nonsense is a great way to lose poker hands and to, you know, shed some chips, especially in a tournament. But that doesn't actually help us when we're in that seat. So I take your frustration, Chris. I think, you know, I'll let Taylor and Rob jump in a sec, but the answer that kind of jumps out to me is, so it's just, it's a lame answer. It's just to like tighten up and play. But even like, I was going to say like play more made hands, but like, what do you mean? Like big pocket pairs? Yeah. Guess what? We're always playing the big pocket pairs. How do you adjust when you have these players who not only call preflop with nonsense, but then stay sticky when they really have no, what's the word I'm looking for? They really shouldn't be sticking around post-flop.
Right. And yeah. I think in particular, I don't think I said what hand I had, right? But right. In particular, I think it's really interesting to ask, what do we do when we miss, right? Mm-hmm. And so in mm-hmm. this particular hand, I had ace-jack offsuit on a queen, 9-8, two-club board. I had no clubs. I think I had ace, I can't remember, but it's a non-club holding ace-jack offsuit. So we got a gut shot. We've got an ace. It's a strong hand against this kind of rather large infinite range. We're probably ahead, but do we keep betting into this sticky player who's always going to be calling us? You know, so how do we approach this?
And are we in position at this
no.
point? Okay.
No. Oh, we're God. In the hijack. They're in the cutoff. Yeah. So they have position on us. And I think they're going to be calling us with a huge right. portion of their range, given that queen seven hand that we saw.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of like the crux of this question is like, hey, someone's playing a ton of hands. They're making a mistake, but they have position on us. Position is valuable. They have this on us. Now, how do we weigh this out where it's like, I know we're making better decisions. However, they still have position on us and are going to always have that advantage against us in all these spots. I think that's what makes like this the interesting topic and figuring out how to play them. I think the first thing that you do is you make a comment to them and say, hey, what are there strings on my chips that keep, you know, bringing your chips in whenever I put mine in the pot? No, that's really lame. But I mean, you can try and make some sort of comment like that. And every time they enter the pot, you know, it's like, oh, you know, what is this about me? You can, there's a human aspect to it. But I think the more logical answer in something like this is, it's kind of lame. It's kind of like what Jim was saying, but it's like, just play your value harder and bluff less. If they're going to call more, bluff less. And that doesn't necessarily mean like tightening up your range preflop. But you know, you're going to play ace jack. You get into this spot and it's like you miss. You're hoping in other situations that when you have ace jack on this queen 9-8 board that you're like, hey, I kind of want them to fold out some other things. Like, I kind of want them to fold a pair of eights. I kind of want them to fold when they've got a gut shot, kind of like we do. And you're kind of hoping to deny equity from that aspect. But if you're not going to deny equity from those because their calling range is way wider, why bloat the pot? When you have made hands, then bloat the pot. So when you have, you know, the ace queen in that situation, bloat the pot. When you've got the jack 10, bloat the pot. When you've got two pair sets, all those types of things, bloat the pot then. Because if they're going to call more, that's how you're going to make them pay, is when they're paying when they're way behind. You're not going to make them pay when they're calling you where you probably have the worst hand, or you're not getting them to fold the hands that you want them to fold. So I think you just, it sounds way too simple, but I think that is the adjustment that we have to make in these types of spots.
Yeah. And one of the other things, when you say bloat the pot, I think one of the other things, adjustments that we should be thinking about in this spot is that, if they are this player that is tending to just call, and maybe is a little bit less experienced, maybe sort of like just kind of wanting to see how a hand plays out, maybe try to get there, whatever they're trying to do. I think we can go big too when we do this, like, because this is a kind of flop where, you know, queen 9-8, if I've got what, let's say I've got king queen on this board, right? Like, this might be a board that I don't really, I'm going to bet probably, or maybe actually a lot of times because I'm out of position, I might be checking to an opponent. But I think in this particular situation, if we've got like king queen here or ace queen or something like that, like, I think we want to bet and bet big, and try to get this player to start to come in to these hands with this very, very wide range. Rather than, because my approach a lot of the time in this kind of situation where I am playing out of position against a player, is to immediately sort of check to them a lot of my range. But that's against playing against a balanced opponent. And here, I think we want to bet our value and bet big, I think.
Yeah, Rob, did you have something?
Yeah, I was going to ask, did you ever see him 3-bet?
Only not pre-flop, really.
Okay.
Not pre-flop
right.
ever at all.
Right.
Post-flop, yes. But that was with value because, you know, this person had a big stack because they were starting to make, it wasn't against me, but they were starting to make some sort of nonsense hands that was frustrating some people at the table.
I imagine, yeah. Then the next question is, did you ever see anybody raise bigger when he was in position on them? Was all the raises pretty standard raises?
Yeah, people were just sort of betting like their normal C bets and like, you know, quarter pot, third pot kind of thing.
Even pre-flop, it was all 2.5, 3 big blinds.
Yep.
So that's what I was wondering. I mean, I'm reading Exploited Play in Live Poker by Alex Fitzgerald, which is, you know, it's cash and tournaments, and he's mainly a tournament player. And he talks about betting big, but, you know, go the 3.5, 4.5 even, pre-flop, and try to see if there's a threshold that this person is not going to call with. Because I ran into the same exact thing last night. I was playing a tournament. And there was this guy, and he was two to my left. And every time I opened, he called. And I'd miss, and I'd be out of position, and I'd have a big hand, but I'd still miss the board, and I'd bet, and he'd call. And I thought, well, he couldn't have hit this, you know. Then I bet again on a turn, and he calls again. And he turns over some nonsense like 6-3, you know, offsuit. And it's very frustrating, but how do you fight that? And it's like when they call, they have something. When he didn't have anything, he just automatically folded. So in this case, this person sounds like for him, having something is having a Broadway card.
Yeah, I think it's having hope. You often talk about having hope. And I think it's like, yeah, like I've got an overcard to this board. That's enough to stick around.
Right, right. So it's understanding that for him to make a call, and again, I think what your idea of betting bigger, even, you know, we always talk about being out of position. You don't bet as often and you bet smaller. But maybe against, if your head's up against that specific person, now maybe is a time to take that GTO framework out and say, okay, how do I exploit what he's doing? So I don't know. I think it's changing your bet sizes, I think, is the first step to finding out, is he bet size inelastic or not?
Yeah, when I was thinking about your spot here, Chris, the two things that I wanted to know was, are they raising? Are they float betting, like when checked to? And then are they size aware? Because it does feel like against a player like this, just throw balance out, stop bluffing, stop semi-bluffing, just don't. And you know, you can often just like get your ace high to showdown. But tell me, did you notice? You kind of answered it already, but
first question is really not raising without strong value. Like if I was to see bet here and got raised, I would think they've got two pair plus, you know, at this point.
Great.
So that's a nice thing to know. And then what was the second question?
Are they elastic to sizing? Like,
Robin, I don't think I have enough information, but my instinct is no, but that is just a guess at this point. I don't think I have any confirmation on that, from what I've seen in the play.
And we should reinforce to our audience, if people are like, people do raise occasionally, but if they're doing it with two pair plus, that's actually all the information you need to know. Right. Like that is something you can exploit. So even if they are playing aggressively sometimes, if they're doing it with very strong hands, that's actually very easy to play against. So that's you know, raising itself or not raising isn't really, you know, a fully encapsulated element of that. So I would say, yeah, I mean, I like the point that Taylor makes, which is that you don't necessarily need to tighten up so much pre-flop, because this player is going to make mistakes post flop in hands, and you can hit a variety of boards just as easily as they can. So the tightness really comes in post flop, and I would just like throw balance out the window. And I actually don't mind getting into hands with players like this, even if they are in position, because I'm not going to lose a big pot. You know, I might lose a small pot. If it's a big pot, I'm winning that pot.
So with this hand in particular, like, I think it's sort of an interesting one, right? Like, if we think that they can, you know, show up here with, I don't even know, like
a queen 10, seven, apparently
10-4 suited. Let's say they've got a gutter and they just it's suited. I'm gonna call, right? So now they're sitting there with a gutter. Like, I get the idea of not betting when we don't have value, but against this kind of opponent, is ace jack value? Like, Taylor, would you bet ace jack here for value?
I wouldn't, mainly for the aspect of, like, think how they're going to play a lot of those hands and how a lot of these situations are going to go. And the point that I was going to make that I'm going to layer in here is, we can still accomplish the same things, but on later streets after we like learn more. Like, generally this opponent like bets when they have it and checks to, you know, hit some of those draws. They're going to check a lot of the hands that they would have called our bets with, so we can pot control with those. Like, it's not always as simple as just trying to like think about it this way, but like, how many streets of value are you hoping to get with ace jack on this board, if it is streets of value even, right? Like, if we check here and they check behind and then the turn is, you know, a four of diamonds or something like that, like, can't we accomplish the same thing on the turn that we would have on the flop? And we've gotten a little bit more clarity and we've gotten some of that position advantage back towards us to understand what they might be playing with. So I think you talked about hands. I think you said 10-5 suited. If the turn is a four, like, they're going to play that much more face up. There's one more card to come. And even if we're still scared there and we check and then they check behind us now on the river, now we can like make decisions and understand, like, if we're going for value, we're going for different pieces. It's not like this, like, we're with other opponents, we're worried about them potentially taking aggressive actions once we check and kind of weaken our range. This is not the opponent type that's really going to turn to an aggressive action line without a very strong made hand. So we don't have to worry about really getting bluffed off our equity, or, man, are we going to fold our gut shot draw versus them when they could have so much junk? It's like, this opponent just doesn't have junk a lot of the time when they're betting.
Right.
I would expect them to check back so much here when we check, like, right. So much. So.
And what are they not going to check back? And doesn't it make versus this opponent type a very exploitative, easy check fold for us to make a lot of the time, even with ace high, gut shot draw?
Right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So yeah, all that I think kind of plays into this. I recently had a heads up. It was heads up in a tournament on ACR.
Humble break.
I had an opponent type, humble break, where my opponent was playing very similar to this. And like Jim said, like, if they're not reacting to bet sizing and it's more just bets and they're going to either call or fold, yeah, take your value, make it big. I was making, you know, 2/3, 3/4 pot size bets on the flop when I hit top pair. And when I didn't hit top pair, I was making 4th size pots bets. And like, I can go back to the hand history and be like, wow, like, this was really poor out of me if my opponent was good, but my opponent wasn't. And I could just exploit that. And it was like, I'm betting a 4th when I'm just trying to get them to fold. And then, you know, if not, you know, go from there. When I have something, bet 3/4, get a call. Bet 3/4 again, get another call. And then, you know, I win one pot and it's 25 bigs.
Yeah, so I feel like
you got to be not afraid to make yourself exploitable when your opponent is not picking up on those things.
I love that. You don't be afraid to make yourself exploitable. I think that's the key when you're playing against unbalanced opponents. And this is a bitter pill for listeners of this podcast, thinking, thoughtful, serious players who want to have balanced ranges, who want to have good bluffing candidates. Unfortunately, you just got to throw those out the window in spots like this, because you're fancy play syndroming yourself when these opponents are not that sophisticated. Chris, you have a response. It looks like you're
I have another question. So, I really like what we're saying. I think this sort of connects with the my approach to this as well. The way I think about these spots. Versus a very tight player, like a very, I very much understand the idea of, like, in some cases, we just don't want to find some of the bluffs. Well, in certain spots, we might want, once they've kind of continued on a hand, continued down a road and shown some strength, we don't want to really find bluffs because we need to be either owning them with value or whatever. And I get the idea that we want to have sort of fewer bluffs in this spot against this player, but do we want to have no bluffs? Are there bluffing candidates against this? And what are they? Do pocket threes turn into a bluff ever against this kind of opponent? Does 5-6 of hearts ever turn into a bluff here? Are there any bluffs?
I would say it depends on like board textures and different things like that. This board texture, maybe there's no bluffs just because of like how well this is going to connect with their like general calling range that they have in this spot. There might just be no bluffs in that situation. But I think there's definitely bluffs in spots where it's like you have pocket threes and then the flop was ace 9-5, you know, very disconnected. They have a lot of like Broadway types of cards that aren't going to get sticky with the ace high board like they might in other situations. Because I think the one situation that you like laid out right away was like, you know, what's their reasoning? Well, they had an overcard to the board. They potentially had like a runner for a straight type of stuff. So it's like they had this like obscure equity. But when it's an ace high board and they can't approve to top pair, that is a little bit scarier for them. Yeah, so I think you might find some bluffs in those situations. But on something that connects so well with their calling range, you might not want to.
I'm kind of curious what you guys think about, because I think sizing is really the last exploit for recreational poker players. Like, I think we are leaving a lot of money on the table by not deviating widely from conventional sizing against exploitable opponents. So I would want to know, and it's hard to do this in a limited, you know, amount of time with one player, but like, is this one of those players where you can just bet one big blind on the flop and the turn, and if you don't get raised, then like just jam river on bricks? And like, are they sensitive to now? It's tough when they are the one with a stack because they've been picking people off all day. But you know, players do cap their range, and if they're the kind of player who just like doesn't know what to do with like a small pair or a drawing hand, so they just like call. Now you put them in a difficult spot when it bricks. But if they're just a real sticky player, like, you don't want to do that because they'll just call. so you really have, like, that's the tricky spot. But I do think there's a question of, and I think, as Taylor points out, it's really board specific. Like, queen, was this queen 9-8 two tone? Like, that's a tough board to get. Like, they're connecting with that board. Mm-hmm. But yeah, ace 7-3 rainbow. That feels like one where you can get, no matter what you have in your hand, like, it actually has, like, it has very little to do with your holdings. It's just their response to your bet sizes. Can you get them to cap their range with some small micro bets on earlier streets,
that's,
and then decide
really
to take
that's
away?
A really interesting, I like that a lot. I like that,
Rob?
A lot.
Cool.
Well, I kind of agree with the bet sizing. Like I said earlier, I think we don't do it enough. When we come up with these types of players, we don't do it enough in general to exploit the passive, you know, let's see a flop. They just want to see a flop. They're going to call two bets. They're going to call a three bet if you happen to three bet them, because they just want to see a flop. And I think we're so ingrained in these bet sizes that we study all the time. Mm-hmm. So that we're not exploitable, so that we're balanced and all of these things, that I think we're losing out on some of the exploits that we can make. And like Taylor said, you're exploiting somebody who wouldn't know that you're exploiting them and wouldn't know how to take advantage of that exploit. So why not go up for it and exploit them? Even though you become exploitable, the chances of you actually being exploited are very slim. So I think there's an opportunity to increase our bet sizes and let's get out of the realm of thing and look stupid.
Yes.
Because people are afraid to look stupid when they're at the poker table. They don't want everybody to point to them and say, look at that idiot. You know, but when you're doing something like that to exploit somebody, you shouldn't care what all of the other passive, I want to see a flop type players think of you, right?
Yeah, they'll be like kind of shaking their head grumpily, throwing their cards in the middle, being like, I know you're bluffing, right? And like, you get, yep. great. Well, you just folded, so I,
yep.
That's fine.
Yep.
Exactly.
You know, I think we should reinforce, I don't think we talk about this often enough, particularly in recreational games, you know, balance is about defense. If you don't need to play defense, then just throw balance out the window. If they're not hand ranging you, if they're not like thinking about how you play different parts of your range, if they are inelastic to sizing, you are stealing from yourself by playing in a balanced fashion against these players. So, you know, it's sexy to talk about, like, God, I love talking about poker strategy and having, you know, blockers in my hand and having good semi-bluff candidates and, you know, board textures that I can really represent the nuts and they can't have it. But that's just like, that's just an academic conversation that you can like listen to the podcast, write in, join Rec Poker Premium. Let's talk some poker strategy. But when you're at the table and, you know, Rob bangs the drum for this all the time, like we are playing poker against the people at the table with us. And those, if they're not cognizant about like how a balanced player plays, you're giving up a huge edge by even trying to balance. And just don't. Just bludgeon them to death with value hands. And, you know, look for these spots where they can be persuaded to fold. And then just like never take that line with a value hand and only take it with the bluff. And then, you know, who knows if you're ever going to play poker with this person again after this, you know, weekend festival. Too, which is another thing. Like, yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I kind of feel like I fancy play syndrome myself way too often, where it's like, oh, I don't want to be exploitable in this spot here, so I have to like continue with the minimum defense frequency because they, you know, they're probably bluffing 25%. Like, no, they're not. No, you're like, stop it. Just play strong hands, bet big when you've got big hands. Like, yeah, it's not the like fun, sophisticated kind of poker that we all get together and enjoy talking about, but it's, you know, the best way to beat these players, I think.
Yeah, and if you think about it, I think one of the things that players, when they're out of position, and we've all been taught that we check more frequently, and when we do bet, we bet smaller more frequently because we're afraid of being check raised. Well, the amount of, or being, I guess if we're out of position, if we're afraid of being raised, the amount of times that people actually raise, either a check raise or any kind of raise, is like 2 to 8% of the time. So that means like 90% of the time, you are not going to be raised. And that 2 to 8% of the time that you are raised, they usually have two pair or better, so it's very easy just to get rid of your hand. So there's nothing wrong with, against a player like this, being out of position and betting three quarters to one pot and just see how they take that.
Although that is the tricky, like that is kind of the trap that Chris and other players at his table like found themselves in, where they're making like conventional bet sizes and getting called by this player.
Right.
And which again, you know, how many, what he, in the hand example that you used, Chris, like he rivered a queen. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of rivers where it just goes check, check, and he loses that pot,
right.
Which we like, but yeah, it's a difficult, you want to feel like you're doing something to exploit this weakness, and just like playing the same way and hoping they don't hit the river doesn't feel like a very active exploit.
And go ahead.
One thing that Taylor was talking about, how we don't have to look for bluffs. You know, what are the obvious bluffs? And if they're not cognizant of all of this, when you're bluffing, bet big. When you got value, bet small, so he'll call. When you're bluffing, bet big, so he'll fold. And find out where that threshold is. And he's not going to realize that you're betting small when you've got value and betting big when you bluff, because he's folded and doesn't know what you had. He'll just think you had a monster when you bet big and you had a kind of a good hand when you bet small.
This is a really good reason to pay attention to hands that you are not in, because you want to see how do these players respond to different bet sizes. Because in the example I used earlier here, like, when you're betting one big blind on flop and turn, like those are value bets with ace jack in that spot, you know, that's how you get a little bit of value out of them. And then, you know, you get to decide based on the run out, what to do on the river. But, whether they're elastic, whether their ranges are size elastic or not, I think is a really key question.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, Chris? Did we solve it?
No, I like this a lot. I mean, there's a lot to think about here. These kind of players, I think, are in sort of like kind of standard recreational fields, mm-hmm. you're going to find this kind of player type a lot. So it's a good player to be thinking about how you're going to approach, especially when you're out of position, because they're so easy to play when you have position on them. And this is as Taylor was pointing out at the beginning, like position is powerful, even if you're a bad player or mm-hmm. a less experienced player, you still have this giant advantage on the player that you have position on. And you, even no matter how good you are, have a severe disadvantage in this situation, especially because when you are called by somebody in position, that's already just a negative event. And when it's happening every time you open, you're just having negative event after negative event after negative event. So you really have to think about how you're going to approach this.
Yeah, I guess I will just reinforce again, sizing. Don't try and be balanced. Don't try and play defense. Just see what you can learn by the size of your bets. And then you need to decide, because mostly, I mean, this is a very recreational style of play, right? To just call, to just come along, to be sticky, to try and make hands. Those types of players overcall to small and medium sized bets. And I'm pretty sure they overfold to like huge bets. But you know, maybe not all the time. So I don't want to just say, yeah, just go shove it in their face on the river, because you don't know. But well,
you have to find out what that threshold is, mm-hmm, you mm-hmm. know, and it's good. It might take a few attempts at different bet sizes, but eventually you'll find what that number is. Mm-hmm. And you can use that to destroy them later.
Mm-hmm. Or someone else will at the table. And because you were paying attention, and, you know, this is, I guess, the last thing I'll mention here is this is why it's so important also to pay attention to the less experienced players at the table, because the most experienced players, they're not going to give off a lot of tells, a lot of live information about their play. They're not going to make as many big errors as the less experienced players. So you really want to pay attention to the players two to your right and two to your left. Like those players that are on either side of you, you're going to play a lot of hands with them. And you really want to drill down on the less experienced players, because they're going to be the ones telegraphing the strength of their hand. And you want to have seen that in a hand before you have to decide if this is where you're going to go all in to try and get them off something just because they capped their range on an earlier street. Taylor, Rob, Chris, excellent conversation. I love hanging out with you guys and talking poker. I'm so glad we are all Wrecking Crew members hanging out on Monday night talking poker. We all have the best freaking job in the world. It's not just me. Well, thank you to all three of you. Thank you to the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, of course. If you want to find out more about them, you can go to runaces.com. Thanks to you, the listeners at home. We couldn't do it without you. And we'll see you again next week on the Wreck Poker Podcast. Have a really good one.